Welcome back to Shattering Myths. In our program just yesterday, we had moved into the test that Yahweh provides for our individual benefit in his Torah, in Devarim, Deuteronomy, in the 13th chapter, to ascertain whether or not something that someone is saying is truthful, reliable, from him, appropriate for us to learn from. And while it is directed principally at those who claim to speak for God, and therefore it is designed to be used to expose and condemn the likes of Muhammad, the likes of Paul, the likes of Rabbi Akiba, the likes of the popes and pastors that permeate the airways of America. It is also useful in evaluating political rhetoric, such as this topic we're discussing. And we still have Glenn on the line. Glenn, I'm going to read this again, and we read it yesterday. But it is amongst the most insightful statements from God that helps us properly evaluate our time and who to trust and who not to trust. It goes as follows. This is from Devarim, the 13th chapter. With regard to every word which beneficially I am instructing you with, accordingly, observe it, closely examining, carefully considering it, for the purpose of engaging in and acting upon it, not adding to it, not subtracting from it. It goes on, but Glenn, just with those thoughts, hasn't God told us that we ought not view things like the U.S. Constitution as being a godly inspired document, that we ought not view the Magna Carta as a godly inspired document, that we ought not view the Christian New Testament as such?
I've long been annoyed by Christians who try to say that, you know, America is a Christian nation. And I certainly wouldn't view.
Oh, we lost Glenn. That was, I don't know if it was on our end or his end. I'd love to have him back. I happen to agree with him. I think this nonsense that people say that America is a Christian nation is utter rubbish. It wasn't the first explorers here may have preponderance of them may have been religiously Christian, but they were savages. They came here not for religious freedom, but for economic opportunity. And the way they went about it was to ravage the people that were already living here. They stole from them. They tortured them. They betrayed them. They murdered them. We did some rather hideous things to them. And the actual framers of the U.S. Constitution, the framers of America, they were Freemasons. And there is no correlation between Freemasonry and Christianity. So, Glenn, we have you back.
Inexplicably cut off there mid-sentence. No idea.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the NSA was listening to what you had to say and decided to drop your call. You know, they have those jets now that fly over all the metropolitan areas, scooping up cell phone data. They're probably scooped you right up.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? I just generally attribute it to lack of overall dependability or overwork of the cell phone networks generally. But
but that's not nearly as much fun. That would be too rational. No conspiracy in that, my friend.
No. But I would say, I mean, you know, like a document like the Magna Carta, the Constitution, so could easily be viewed as an ethical improvement over, you know, previous systems. But, you know, certainly
no
claim divine inspiration, you know, Yeah, I mean, it's a good idea not to enslave people, not to exploit people, not to persecute your own people. Yes, that's all very good stuff.
Right. You know? Yeah, you know, if you read what's interesting, very few people actually read the Declaration of Independence beyond the first sentence or two. But, you know, most of what's in the Declaration of Independence in terms of our grievances are the very things that we do today. I mean, I read it the other day, about a month ago. Someone sent me a full copy of it and said, you ought to read this because it's almost everything we complain about Britain doing it to its colonies, we do to the world.
Yeah,
to ourselves.
He has done this. He has done that. He has done this. He has done that. Yeah, it gets a bit litany. It actually almost kind of reminds me of what Yahweh said about anointing Saul as a king, anointing a king over
right.
He shall take. You know, it's
right. Yeah, in fact, it was pretty interesting. I loved Yahweh's approach to this because they first came and they said, you know, we want to be like other countries. Here's Yahweh telling them over and over and over and over again, don't be like other countries. I don't want you to emulate the other countries. The other countries are doing things that are counterproductive. You know, they've got these militaries, they've got these jaundiced financial systems, they've got these ridiculous counterproductive religions. Don't be like them. And so the children of Israel said, we want to be like the other countries, we want a really tall, handsome, strong king. And God says, no, you don't. No, you don't. All he's going to do is abuse you. You don't want one of those. And they said, oh, yeah, we do. And they kept on coming and kept on coming and said, yeah, we really want one of these. Why can't we have one of these? And they picked Saul as the tallest, most handsome, strongest, most militaristic leader and said, okay, that's what you want. You know, free will and all. There you go. You can have him. And of course, what did he do to him?
And he warned him, he shall take. And they're just like, okay, we'll still take him. Funny that he ended up being a very, mentally disturbed and demonized kind of guy who needed songs played by Dota's therapy.
Yeah, and you know, and he engaged in all manner of war. I mean, he not only fought the Philistines and lost, but he's also chronicled engaging with the Egyptians as they were. The Egyptians didn't care about who was in Yehudah. It meant nothing to them other than they had to march through there to get to the Hittites and get to the Assyrians' outposts and the like, and so it was their vulnerable back door. And so they were only concerned from that point of view, but he just got pummeled.
Right.
And and all the while, the person that Yahweh loved the most, David, Saul and was, hunting him down, tried to find him to kill him.
Yeah, and prior to that, I mean, Yahweh used him as a means of mercy on Saul in his time of torment, and then no good deed goes unpunished, so of course,
of course.
And Saul went after him. So, but anyway, you were talking earlier about America and education, mm-hmm. and I am by no means a grammarian or a linguist or anything like that, but I was raised and educated in our public school system in the 60s and 70s, went to college, American universities in the 70s and 80s, and back then, a fairly decent foundation was laid for the English language in terms of grammar, spelling, syntax, word order, all that. I can listen to the news segments, the commercials. It makes me crazy, the grammatical errors I hear, or I can even watch the news of people presenting on the CIA scandal making very common grammatical errors, guys with master's degrees and PhDs and who, can't get the correct form of the indefinite article or subject verb, number agreement.
Right.
I'm like, well, what's going on? I mean,
first of all, when we deal with what's wrong with America, I think that you have to begin with the indoctrination as opposed to education of generations. So we're talking in a strong sense. Now, when you're dealing with speech, it is almost impossible for someone who is speaking to consistently use appropriate grammar. In fact, if they were to, their speech so even becomes it becomes offensive. It becomes so stilted, so pedantic that that it's almost impossible to listen to. You cannot be an effective communicator if in your speech you're more worried about grammar than you are about communicating a message. But in
the word order itself alone would sound pretentious if you did everything absolutely. I'm not talking about that kind of perfection. I'm talking about there is a lot of them.
Now, when you're dealing, though, with written news, when I read a newspaper, I read my online written news, and I am not an English major. My worst subject in school was grammar, spelling, English, that sort of thing. That was my worst subject. Always was. I have a more scientific, mathematical mind than I have a mind for English. And anything where a word spelled the same way can be pronounced two entirely different ways for two entirely different meanings, and there are more exceptions than there are rules, bothers me. So I am never going to be comfortable with this stuff. And yet I can read the articles that are being promoted by the world's leading journalistic institutions, and I just cringe. There are so many misspellings. There's so many errant punctuations. There are so many, subject-verb disagreements. The grammar is so poor. And you realize that the only thing that the journalist is skilled at is English. That's all. They don't know anything else. I mean, they're wrong. Their substance of what they're writing is 90% errant. But just in the writing, they can't get it right. And it's everywhere. It's pervasive. We have really dumbed it down in this nation.
I heard a talking head this morning talk about this CIA scandal and say how the Bush administration is dancing on the head of a pin. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's a complete misapplication of the metaphor. You know, I'm like, I can't even use a metaphor correctly. You know,
correct. Yeah, I happen to be a huge fan of metaphors, as is Yehoah. I think metaphors are an extraordinarily effective way to communicate, to give visualization to an idea. And the last thing you're doing is dancing on the head of the pin. We'll be back. Yahweh, in this statement here, is telling us that if we take his Torah teaching, the guidance that he has provided in his Torah, seriously, and this is only talking about the Torah, that's all that existed of Yah's word at the time that this statement was made. So he's not talking about the prophets, not talking about the Psalms, not talking about, my God, not talking about the Christian New Testament. He's not talking about the Constitution of the United States. He's talking about one document. The document that was scribed on our behalf by Moshe regarding the inspiration that he received from Yahweh, the Torah. And he's calling it instruction, providing guidance and direction. That's what Yahweh means. And so in this opening declaration from God on this topic, he tells us that there's a purpose for the education that he's providing for us. And the primary purpose is articulated. But there is a secondary purpose. The primary purpose is that once we closely examine and carefully consider the teaching and instruction that Yahweh has provided for us in his Torah, then we are in a position to respond and to engage in the relationship. Now, that's the primary purpose. But there's another purpose. You know, how is it that Glenn comes to recognize that America is not a Christian nation and that Christianity is not a beneficial religion? And the way that we come to know these things is we view everything from the foundation that is provided in the Torah. When you closely examine and carefully consider the instruction and guidance and direction Yahweh provides in his Torah, it gives you the proper foundation and the proper perspective to know what to trust to know what to care about, to know what to reject, to know what to oppose. It's the very basis of giving us these things. I don't oppose the U.S. government because I'm a communist. I'm not. I oppose it because it is in opposition to what Yahweh said is important, true, and reliable. I don't oppose Christianity because I'm a Muslim, because I'm not. I oppose it because it is directly contradictory to what Yahweh has provided to us by way of instruction and teaching. We reject these lies, we reject these human institutions because they're wrong. And we know they're wrong because they're in wholesale disagreement with what God said was right. Now, the other thing that comes through here is that by saying to us, don't add to it, don't subtract from it. And this is the Torah that he's talking about now. It strikes me that he's telling us that everything you need to know is in the Torah. Now, I'm not telling you, Glenn, you're involved in healthcare, and there are a lot of things you need to know to do your job that aren't in the Torah. But everything you need to know about the perspective on, proper perspective on life, on who Yahweh is, on how you can engage in a relationship with him, everything you need to know that is vital to your long-term existence in God's family and part of his home is in the Torah. You don't need to consider any other resource.
Yeah, there's not a lot of instructions in there about engineering or healthcare or anything like that. No.
No.
It's about how to relate to Yahweh.
Exactly. Which if you want to escape this world, it is the one thing you need the answer to. So he's telling us that you don't need to add to this because every answer that you need to every important question is there regarding the purpose of life, the purpose of your existence, the purpose of this planet. Now, he also said, don't subtract from it. And therefore, what he's saying is that, you know, you really need all of it to understand it. And that when you remove something from his Torah, you know, for example, you remove the story of Abraham from the Torah, you end up with something that is not only truncated but can easily be twisted and diminished in value. When you remove, as Christians want to do, the creation account from the rest of the Torah, you get a God that is disembodied from his own words, his own instructions. Yahweh inspired Moshe to continue to reveal that if a person who claims to proclaim a message of a deity or to foretell the future stands up trying to establish himself, kum, rises up and exalts himself. It's a really interesting statement. We talked about this at length yesterday, and I'm going over old ground, but it's, there's only one way you come to understand, the only way you grow in understanding, and that is to closely examine and carefully consider. And kum is such a strange word here. You know, you think of prophet, and the first thing you think of prophet, their letters or their sermons, their words, their speeches. You don't very often think of prophets along the lines of a Hebrew verb, kum. To kum means to stand up, to take a stand, to establish oneself, to rise up. And so God is distinguishing those who are misleading by those who kum. Now, God wants us to stand up, but when we stand up, God almost always uses either tzedak, which is to stand upright, which gets a whole different connotation to misleading. You know, it's the opposite. And also, tzedak is associated with righteousness and vindication, so it's a very different kind of standing. he also, when we're standing, you know, constantly tells us that we should halak, walk towards him, walk in his direction. So kum here, while kum is a perfectly fine term, but in this context, it's saying that those who are false prophets have something in common, which is that they're trying to establish themselves. You know, in an earlier segment, I went on the same path that I've gone on so many times before, which is that if you're listening to somebody who's trying to impress you, who's trying to establish their credentials, who is trying to make a name for themselves, who is trying to achieve elected office or some position of influence or power, if they're trying to establish their credibility, you ought to walk away from them. You ought to disassociate from them. You ought to disregard what they have to say. It is a common trait amongst those who are speaking for themselves and not from God. Moshe didn't try to establish himself. Abraham didn't try to establish himself. Noah didn't try to establish himself. No. Yahweh established them. But a false prophet, like Muhammad, that's most of the Quran is Muhammad trying to establish himself. Most of Paul's letters are Paul trying to establish himself. When you come across that, run. Now, the next part of this is establish himself in your midst or an interpreter of revelations and provides a sign or miracle. Signs or wonders. What did Paul use to justify his credibility? To say, yeah, I'm credible because look at the signs and wonders. Oops. Did Yahusha ever say, you should trust me, you should rely on me because of the signs and wonders? No. Did Yahweh ever tell the children of Israel, because of the signs and wonders, you should trust and rely on me? No. Did Yahweh say, if proof that I am God is the signs and wonders? No. Yahweh, on occasion, does engage in human affairs, and he does miraculous things. Not very often. And it's never done to impress. It's done to facilitate a promise. He promised to free the chosen people from the crucible of Egypt. And so he performed some miracles, all designed to accomplish a specific promise. They are not, none of them were designed to show off. It wasn't showing off. You know, if he simply wanted to torch every Egyptian and then provide a path of gold for the chosen people, he could have done so. That would have been showing off. It's not his style. You know, when you look at Yahusha's life, as particularly as it's presented by Matanyah, and he's healing people, it's almost always as if it's a bother, like it's, oh, that's not why I'm here. I know, yes, you realize I can do it, and yes, you're coming to me because you realize I can do it, and, you know, and I'm going to do it, but you can see him being reluctant, saying, no, what does he want me to do for you? And then always leaving, departing. Because he's not a show-off. And many of the times that he performs a healing, he says, you know, I'm not doing this to show off. It's not the purpose. I'm only doing this. If you can see me doing this and causing a lame person to be able to walk, then you understand why I said your sins are forgiven. You know, it's not his style. You know, Yahusha didn't even attempt to establish himself. No, he told the truth. He honored the promises he had made. And he revealed himself to very few people post Bukhurim. Quiet. Understated. But not those who were Qum, rising up, establishing themselves with signs and wonders. Yahweh uses prophecy as his tool to prove who he is. That's how he proves who he is, prophecy. And prophecy isn't just predicting the future. From prophecy, from Yahweh's point of view, it's being able to get the whole of time right. History as well. And that is the most rational way, the most reasonable way for God to prove who he is. It's not by doing miracles. I mean, you look at man in the medical practice, we're performing some things that you would consider miraculous. I mean, if I look at how we took a man to the moon and brought him back safely, it's pretty darn miraculous. When I look at how we harness nuclear energy to make power, pretty miraculous. I mean, there's some miraculous things. You know, if you were to take some of the things we're doing now and you take it back in time, people would be wild and say, wow, that's a sign. That's a wonder. It's miraculous. But it doesn't make it good. It just makes it miraculous. Not God's style. He'd much rather cause you, encourage you to use your mind to observe the evidence of his predictions, to you, to observe the evidence of their fulfillment, and to put those two things together and run a probability and do it for each of his prophecies, and ultimately to come to know for certain that Yahweh is God and that he authored these words that we are considering. Prophecy is the ultimate tool that appears to the mind. It's not braggadocious. And it identifies a being who exists throughout time. It identifies a being who literally defines time, a being who is time. So this goes on to say that when a miracle worker who's trying to establish himself appears before you and who has spoken arrogantly, has either subtracted from the Torah or added to the Torah, and you and he says, let's go after other gods, which you have not known, and let's worship them, let's serve them, let's minister on their behalf. What was Paul's claim? Is the gospel of grace? False god. What is the basis of Christianity? Their Bible. That's a false god. What do they refer to Yahweh as? The Lord. That's a false god. Who is the God of Christianity? Jesus Christ, false god. What did Muhammad claim that was God's name? Allah, false god. When they go after gods that you have not known and said, let's serve them, let's worship them, then you know they're rotten. Do not listen to the words of that prophet. And yet the rich Warrens still have their churches. The Hagees have their television ministries. The Pope has his Catholic channel. God says, don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. Reject them outright. You know, this fellow that I've been communicating with that is coming out of Christianity, one of the things he's had a struggle with, and is, I think, has finally resolved it, is, you know, wants to listen to many different sources and see what you can learn from them, like rabbinical sources to why they've corrupted their language. And my response is, don't listen to them. And someone else that says, you know, it's really not shalom, it's shalom. And that's the, I think it's the Black Hebrew movement. And I said, don't listen to them. Don't listen to them. Listen to Yahweh. Anyway, he's provided everything you need to know. Don't go after and worship these false gods. Don't even listen to the words of those prophets or those interpreters of revelations. Because the test that Nakah, the means to learn if something is true and is of Yahweh, your God, accordingly, is for you to know, to yada, to recognize, to acknowledge, and to understand, is whether this affirms your love for Yahweh, your God, with all of your heart and with all of your soul. Now, you look at Paul's writings. He speaks of the Torah as a tough disciplinarian. He speaks of the Torah as being pornography, of being a document which enslaves. Since that's Yahweh's testimony, it's Yahweh's initial invitation for us to engage with Him, if it presents it as a document which enslaves, is that going to cause you to love Him or hate Him? In the last segment of this, I want to continue to focus on God's instruction here. Think of Christianity. Christianity is based upon a caricature of a misnomer. Jesus Christ. He is wholly disassociated from Yahweh, wholly disassociated from the Torah, wholly disassociated from what he did, which was fulfill Passover, unyeasted bread, and first fruits, as well as Shavuot, the promise of seven. And misnamed. There is no Jesus. Christ is not a name, not even a title. So, you'd have to ask yourself, that's the test here. Does a religion which seeks to worship a caricature based mostly on Dionysus of Jesus Christ, does that affirm your love for Yahweh? Or does it distract you from Him? A religion that says we don't have to pay attention to anything that God whose name we don't even know, and that Old Testament which is now passé, because we got this New Testament and this new God. Does that affirm your love for Yahweh? So since it doesn't, aren't we being told here we should not listen to any of it? We should turn a complete deaf ear to Christianity, to its New Testament? I mean, you can't find anything in Christianity that would affirm your love for Yahweh. They don't use His name, they don't know His name, and they sure as hell don't like what He had to say. They said it doesn't apply to them anymore. It doesn't. They say that, no, they don't have to observe Passover. It doesn't apply to them. They don't have to pay attention to Shabbat. Sabbath doesn't apply to them. They don't have to pay attention to the terms and conditions of the old covenant because they got a new one. That old one doesn't apply to them. They don't have to know and use Yahweh's name. In fact, when you try to do so, they get all, wigged out. So I want to tell you here that Christianity does not affirm one's love for Yahweh, nor even cause anyone to see Yahweh as God. Same thing can be said of Islam. In fact, Allahu Akbar is to diminish the credibility of Yahweh, to put Allah above Yahweh. That's what Allahu Akbar is all about. Allah is greater. This goes on to say, after Yahweh, your God, you shall walk. Remember I was telling you that there's a distinction between kum and this concept with the false prophet of establishing oneself, and Yahweh's instructions, which are always focused on two things, encouraging us to be sadak, which is something that he enables to be vindicated and upright, and that his instruction to us is to walk toward him, to walk with him, to walk along the path that he has provided. He's just said that this Torah that Moshe is sharing is guidance, and now he's saying, walk in it. Halak. You should be guided and directed by the Torah's guidance. After following Yahweh, your God. And you can follow him because he walked the walk. He didn't just talk the talk. After following a car, Yahweh, your God, you should walk. You should be guided and directed. And with him, you should always and genuinely be respectful. You know, I see Yahweh as that. I see him as my friend. We're companions. We share good times, good laughs, good insights. I do not put God on a pedestal. I do not worship him. But I'm here to tell you I respect him. I know who he is. In fact, the lower profile Yahweh takes, the less he strives to be dominant and to come off as all-powerful and all-knowing, the less he does those things, the more I come to respect him. He's lovable. He's approachable. He's knowable. Yeah, I respect him. And that's what he is encouraging us to do, to respect him. And there's no better way to respect him than carefully consider what he had to say in his Torah.